Hello there and welcome to another episode of the Ultimate Mums Club podcast. In this episode, I am talking to Natalie Carr of Athena's Bounty. She is another one of the partners within my membership group, and she's very kindly shared some of the struggles that she experienced in the early days of being mum, including her breastfeeding and postnatal depression. So before we start, I just want to say to you all that if you are in the early days of motherhood and you are struggling, your baby blues are hitting you hard, then please do reach out to a professional for some support. There are some excellent charities out there that are there to help you too. Pandas UK is one of them. If you do need to be pointed in the right direction for some further help and support, please do contact me. My door is always open. It is so lovely to have you here. It means that you have grabbed a snippet of time for you, and that is brilliant. Here at the Ultimate Mums Club podcast, I hope to provide you with a supportive and informative listen. We will be hearing from many different mums, listening to their stories, as well as speaking to experts offering their guidance in those more challenging times. I will also be sharing my journey as a mum and how I juggle being mum alongside running my own business and finding some kind of time to myself. Let's get cracking. So hello, Natalie. Thank you so much for joining us today. Can't wait to hear your story and talk to you a bit more about your journey as a mum. So Natalie and I know each other, well, we've only known each other for a very short time, haven't we?
Yeah.
but I feel like I've known you for years. And so I thought a good place to start is, you know, with your birth story, just briefly, because I know that we want to sort of talk more about your struggles once you became a mum. But if you don't mind sharing briefly, you know, what kind of pregnancies you had and what your birth stories were like, that'd be fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it weren't easy going from the beginning. I literally fell pregnant really quickly, which I wasn't expecting for both of them. My husband kind of, you know, he's just like, yeah, like he just thinks he's a stud because, you know, he's like, yeah, I just have to look at you and you get pregnant. But so obviously they were happy accidents. They weren't necessarily planned. But we just kind of, I was really, really broody. So I was kind of like, yes. And I think because I'd been a nursery nurse before, I was just kind of like, oh, I've been in a room with like 15 babies, like one is going to be a cinch. And then obviously pregnancy was hard and I really didn't enjoy it. I got something called obstetric cholestasis, which is it's a liver problem that you can get in pregnancy. It makes you very, very itchy and usually starts on your hands and feet. But I found that I was just itchy all over and it drove me mad. Yeah. So I had to, I think it's from 28 weeks onwards, I had to go every single week for blood tests to check my like bile acids and my liver functions, things like that. And obviously I had to be kept a close eye on. So if there wasn't movements and this, that, and the other, it meant constantly having to go in and, you know, check baby was okay. So it was just quite a stressful time because I didn't know anybody that had had it. And, you know, I was kind of like, oh, God, what is all this, you know, hubbub. And it's the fact that it was going into hospital every single week up until obviously I had him. So that was with Theo. And it was just, it was a bit of a struggle, really, because they told me I'd have to be induced because there's a slight risk of stillborn if you leave it like to happen naturally. So obviously I was like, oh my God, you know, stressing out, having this god awful pregnancy. I had really bad swelling. So I could barely walk. My feet were absolutely like balloons. And just so uncomfortable. And I was thinking all that and potentially could lead to, you know, a stillborn. So I was like, no, okay, I'll be induced, even though I'd had all these dreams of having a home birth and, you know, all this nice you know, I'd set it up in my head of what I wanted my birth to be. And it ended up being obviously, you know, hospital, being induced. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't all bad. It was quite a quick labour compared to like a lot of stories I hear. Mm-hmm. Because I'd started my induction kind of like midday-ish. And within a couple of hours, I managed to kind of have my waters broken. And I think when they broke my water, they're like, oh, you're pretty much like, you know, you're already 2 centimeters dilated when they broke my waters and this, that, the other. So like, oh, this is good. It was just one of those ones where I just had constant contractions with, obviously, because you're on the hormones that obviously induce you. I just couldn't get it stabilized. So it was just like having a constant contraction of the time. And they were like trying to like, you know, like measure the doses out so that, you know, to kind of make it a bit more gradual, but it was just horrendous. But I just kind of went into like a zone out. Play. I don't know what my husband always said to me, is like, oh God, I don't know what you're going to be like having a baby because you're my pain threshold, because I've had tattoos done and I pass out every time I get them done. So he was like, oh God, what's she going to be like? I bet she's going to be swearing. I bet she's going to be like this. And actually I just kind of had a contraction, just went really quiet, zoned in and breathed. And then as soon as it was over, just like carried on having a chat and listening to Ed Sheeran and stuff.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Far more relaxed than me.
But yeah, it was a bit like that. And I think they kept on saying to me, oh, you're not ready to push and this, that, the other. And I was like, no, you know, you kind of just know. Yeah. And that happened with both times. It's like, they said to me, I think they checked me and they were like, oh, you're 5 centimeters. It's going to be a while. Alex went off to go and get some chips. And within about 10 minutes, I said to my mom, I was like, mom, I need to push. And I was pushing. And like the midwives are like, like they didn't know what to do with themselves. He was obviously still out getting his chips. And we had to quickly try and find him because I was pushing. And they were like, surely you're not ready. We've just checked you 10 minutes ago and you were 5 centimeters. And they checked again. They're like, oh, no, okay, she's ready to go. So I think my labor with Theo was about, like active labor, about 5.5 hours.
Oh, that sounds glorious.
Which they thought was quite unusual with being induced. with Athena, it was even quicker though. Bless her, poor thing, shot out like a. I do feel sorry for her. I know it was because again, I was hoping with Athena it was going to be a different story, but I did end up having OC again with her. They did say it was an 80% chance of getting it again. And with her, my, they call them like the bile acids. It was a lot more up and down. With Theo, I'd kind of, it stabilized. It had gone up to the point that they'd diagnosed me with it, but then it kind of stayed low. Whereas with her, it kept jumping up and going down and up. So I was constantly having to go, I was in the hospital twice every week with her, which was absolutely horrendous because they just kept going up and down all the time. I had to have a diabetes test because they thought that she was going to be really big. She wasn't. She was 8 pound 1 when she was born, but they were like, oh, she's going to be a really big baby, this and that and the other. And again, I was forced with the idea of, oh, I'm going to have to be induced again, which was like, I just really wanted to have a natural birth. I wanted to know, like, what's it going to feel like to, like, get those natural contractions and happen that way. And I knew that when she was due, she was due originally, I think, in January time. And my parents were going on holiday over Christmas. So I was kind of like, it's fine, they'll be back in January. And then when they said, no, you definitely, we need to induce you earlier. I think I got induced about 38 weeks. And I was like, oh, my mom and dad aren't going to be here. So they were in Tenerife for the first week when she was born. So it was just me and Alex on our own. We had to desperately try to find someone to look after Theo because we had no one to look after him. Our hospital, it's about a 45-minute drive from where we live because we used to have a maternity centre in Redditch, but they got rid of that. So it was a 45-minute drive to get to the hospital. So it was a bit of a nightmare and like stressful because it was around Christmas. So I was induced on the 27th of December. So just after Christmas, so lots of people were already away or doing things with their family. So trying to get someone to look after Theo was like stressful. I was thinking, oh my God, am I going to end up having to do this on my own? Because if we can't get anyone to look after Theo, then Alex is going to have to be with him because they won't let him on the ward. So I was just like stressing. And it all got sorted in the end, luckily. Alex's brother looked after him and, you know, he was with me the whole time. They did kind of say to me, oh, it could be up to 4 days to get a bed, because I'd gone into hospital to be induced, but they said that they needed to obviously get a bed and a midwife ready. And until they did that, they couldn't break my waters.
Right.
So when they said possibly 4 days wait, I was just like, oh God, they're looking after him for a day. They can't look after him for any more than that. I'm going to be on my own and this, that, and the other. Luckily, within the same day, they got a slot for me. And same situation where I was like constant contractions. I had absolutely nothing whilst they were putting the doses.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean.
Baby brain still goes. Stuff.
I know.
3 years on. IV.
So I had absolutely nothing and I was like, oh, this is okay. So they kept on putting my dose up, making it higher and higher until there was just a point where it was just, they're like, are you actually having a break between contractions? I was like, no.
Oh, God.
Just dying. It was hard, but I started feeling like really ill, like faint and this, that, and the other. But then I needed to push and they were like, let's try and get you looking like you're not going to pass out first. I was like, no, I'm sorry. I know what you're saying is right, but I need to ignore you because I need to push. And they're like, you're not quite dilated all the way. No, push it. I was terrible.
Oh, bless you.
But it's the thing, isn't it, that it doesn't matter what anyone says to you, like you can't push. There's just something that comes and you just can't. You just have to go, sorry, it's happening.
I think I can relate to that because obviously I had quite a lengthy birth with Seb, and I went into more detail with that in my first episode. But I can relate to that because I thought I was pushing before and I thought I was having contractions. But then when it really did happen, there was no other option. And I remember Simon saying to me, you can't have him yet. You know, you've got to wait until we get to the bed and this. And I said, oh, I can't stop it. You know, it just happened.
It is. I mean, it's funny, really, because I always said to Alex, I said, you know what? My IBS has trained me for this moment. Like, I was like, I've been having like stomach cramps and, you know, and having that kind of pain and stuff like that, because that's what, like, you do, you get that kind of crampy feeling and that urge, like, I need to get this. And it was, and bless her, poor Athena, she shot out like a cannon. She was, I think my active labor was like 45 minutes with her.
But I
ended up scaring Alex though, because she came out so quick, she wasn't crying, so that he did have to kind of press the button to kind of get everybody to come. So he nearly passed out. I was thinking, like, there I was, like, I just pushed her out and I was just like, oh, thank God for that, she's out. Completely oblivious to what was going on. He was having a little panic attack. Must have had like a little bit of PTSD because he was so traumatized, you know, by having to, like, I think it's all the One Born Every Minute episodes he'd watched.
Yeah, not a good idea to watch those before you have a child.
I was obsessed. I loved it. I was like preparing me.
See, I was the complete opposite. I did not watch one episode.
Did you not?
And I've watched it since, but I thought, no, I'm better off just going into this not knowing anything.
Oh no, I loved it. I watched it constantly, like on repeat, bouncing on my birth ball. But yeah, so he was quite traumatised by it. I mean, to be fair, before anyone had actually come to like resus and everything, she had started crying on her own. And they just said, oh, it's just because it was, you know, it was very fast. So you know, yeah. Poor kid, didn't have time to think. She's like, Jesus Christ, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yes, I need to breathe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was okay in the end.
Yeah.
They, I did have to have stitches with her. I didn't have to with Theo. Mm. So that was a bit more traumatic, so to speak, because it just seemed to go on forever. And yeah. I was like, then I was like, are you done yet? And they're like, not, yeah, nearly done. And they must have said that about five times. I'm like, I think they're lying to me. I said, don't feel like it's nearly done.
Yeah, it's not. It's like an out of body experience, isn't it? That
it is, because it was.
Explain.
I did. I was kind of like desperate, saying to them, like, does it really need stitches? Is it all right? They went, it's an internal one.
Oh yeah,
an internal tech. And they're like, and I was like, should be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. They're like, no, we do need to do it. I was like, oh, for God's sake. So it was like, and it's just like, because it's not weird enough having somebody down your free-for area,
you know,
getting your baby out. Now I've got two people with, like, you know, the microscope kind of thing, like stitching the inside of, like, oh my God.
There is nothing glamorous about giving birth, let me tell you.
No, and there Alex is holding her and kind of like still like traumatized by it. I'm like, you're traumatized. Try having this.
Yeah.
I says, I don't care what anesthetic they use. I said, I can still feel them stitching me
up. Yeah. Oh, don't. It makes me sort of cross my legs just thinking about it.
I know. It was.
So after you had your lovely children, how was life for you then? You know, because I know you shared with me before, you did experience postnatal depression. How soon after you had the children did you feel like that set in? Was it sort of, I mean, because going through your birth story, both of them, there's a lot going on there. So it doesn't surprise me that you did have postnatal depression, because obviously a lot of mums experience baby blues, according to Google. I did Google it. I think it's about 50 to 75% of us will experience baby blues, and then 10% of that amount will experience postnatal depression. So when did that set in for you? Do you know, or were you tired?
I mean, I think with Theo, I was quite low, and I do, now that I look at it, I probably did have maybe a little bit milder with him, but I didn't seek help really. And I think I was, because it was my first baby, I was spending a lot of time around my mum and dad's. I was going out to a lot of baby groups. So I had that kind of support there, that I was going out and getting out and doing stuff. Whereas with Athena, I think because I had a four-year-old, and it was that kind of, you know, that stress, there wasn't really any time in between, like, to relax, because then I felt like I had to give him time as well, because, you know, I don't want him to be resentful of the baby. So it was that type of thing of that there was just no respite, and yep. She wasn't a very good sleeper or a very good feeder. That's the thing with Theo. He was quite a good he struggled with the breast, I think, because he had tongue tie, which we didn't get diagnosed till he was 4 months. So we had a long time of trying to get him sorted. But he, you know, he did use, like, he'll drink, you know, he would have the milk and he would have his bits and bobs. But he slept, I think, from probably about 7 weeks or so. He was kind of roughly going through ish, you know, maybe wake up like once or twice for a feed. But with Athena, she was up quite a lot, and she'd be up and she'd be just like, I'm awake, let's party.
Yeah.
The sleepless nights with her were horrendous, and she was tongue-tied, which we found out a lot. So I think because we knew with Theo, I made sure, like, even at the hospital, I'm like, can you please check for a tongue tie? Because I'm not going through the trauma of being told that I'm breastfeeding wrong. Try this position, try that position. But actually, it wasn't me. It was the fact that they couldn't latch on. Mm-hmm. And she was quite, she just couldn't latch on at all. And my nipples were like on fire. They ended up bleeding. They ended up, you know, every time you go to the midwife, it was kind of like, well, they're not cracked yet, so that it's not too bad. Oh. And then I go to them like, it's cracked now. They're like, well, it's not bleeding. And then I'm like, it's bleeding. Like, what's going to happen before you actually like help me?
Yeah.
And I did. I gave up breastfeeding with Athena a lot earlier than I did with Theo, just because of the pain element of it. But I exclusively pumped for 4 months, which was, I mean, it's hard work because you have to pump. And then you've got to feed. And it's just that whole kind of process. It just makes it 10 times longer than it normally has to be. That's why the postnatal depression, I think, with Athena was a lot worse. I think because there was just so much pressure that I knew she was going to be my last. And I wanted it to go right. And so far I'd had OC with both of them. So both of my pregnancies weren't pleasant. I'd also got quite ill with her. I kept on having like fainting spells and stuff. So I ended up having to leave work earlier because I just kept like having moments. I was a TA. And there's a few times the kids in my school was like, Mrs. Carr looks like she's going to pass out. Oh, no. Yeah. So having to like sit in a little room, having like a chocolate bar. And I was just like, oh God. Waiting for someone to come pick me up, which was really depressing. So I'd had that, so I was like, great, my pregnancy was worse. And then the feeding situation was worse because I'd never bled or anything like that with Theo. So I was just like, Christ, this is my last chance to do it right. And it's actually going more wrong than the first time. So I think that really culminated quite quickly, that I just felt really low. And I went to I think it was my health visitors were still coming round and getting her weighed and stuff. And I just said, I'm not doing well.
No.
You know, I just feel like I'm failing everything. I feel like I'm second guessing, even though I've got a child already, I feel like I'm second guessing everything. And like even when she was 6 months old and we were starting to wean, she was just a terrible eater. So every kind of step, it was just stressful. So yeah, they referred me to Homestart, which was amazing. So I went on to a course with them called Moms in Mind.
Yeah.
And it was basically like a group therapy session. We talk about, you know, they were saying like statistics of, you know, you only have to be like a fantastic, you know, a good parent X amount of, you know, percent of the time, you know, you're not always going to be perfect. And I was like, oh, you know, and it was just looking at different techniques and sharing our birth stories and stuff, and it just really helped. But yeah, I'm glad that I sought the help this time with it, because Homestart have been amazing, because I have been very up and down with my mental health, especially with this pandemic. And they referred me for hypnotherapy, which is just like,
that's brilliant.
Been amazing. So yeah, they were my saviours, really, Homestart.
That sounds amazing. I'm so glad that, you know, it's refreshing to know and hear, because you do hear stories about, for example, with the breastfeeding thing, you know, getting told by professionals, no, you must breastfeed. And, you know, some that say, no, it's up to you. And it's, can be quite confusing, can't it? But to know with something as serious as postnatal depression that they just pointed you in the right direction immediately and left it to them to support you, it's really good to hear. I must add there that obviously you know, not all health professionals will misadvise you on breastfeed. Ultimately it's your decision at the end of the day.
Oh, definitely. I think there was because I had so many problems, I spoke to so many different people regarding breastfeeding, and the advice that you get is so different compared to everyone else. Like I had one lady who came around, she was meant to be my like support worker, and she was like holding like this, no, do this, do that. And I just felt like she was really like she was getting my breast and like putting it in his mouth. And I was just like, this is a little bit like too hands-on for me. And I don't feel comfortable. Very invasive. And she just made me feel like I was failing, and no one checked about the tongue tie. And as soon as I spoke to somebody else, and she said, oh, have you looked for a tongue tie? And as soon as, again, another person, not, you know, I think it was at like a baby bistro type thing where you can go and they'll help you with feeding. And I was like, oh no. And then as soon as I went down that route from her, that's when things started to fall into place. But then obviously it took 4 months for him to get his tongue tie sorted. And by the time it had got sorted, every time I got my breast, he would scream at me. Oh, I used to go to the, baby bistro, and they would say, I'd explained it to them. They're like, okay, show us what you do. I literally whipped it off. He saw it, screamed like, oh, we've not seen that before. So, you know, you have to know yourself as well, I think. I think I was very much going off what everyone was saying and following their advice. Whereas with Athena, I mean, I remember asking, I was like, am I allowed to, like, I said to her, I was like, I really want her to have my breast milk because I know it's really important. And obviously I was producing quite a lot. After a while, honestly, it took about a week for my milk to come through. So the poor kid was starving for a week. Oh. And all of a sudden I was like a bloody fire road.
Fire I can supply everywhere. It to the whole of the street. Don't worry.
It pretty much was. I had about two drawers full of my freezer.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
It was crazy. But then she wasn't drinking it. She was being really, you know, I was just like, can I exclusively pump? And they're like, yeah, but it's like I need their permission. I think that's what moms do, is that you feel like you need their permission to do things, even though you know technically it's right for you. Because I hated breastfeeding. I felt it really uncomfortable.
I'm quite
big bosomed as well, so it's not always the easiest to get the most comfortable positions, or when you're out and about. You know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm pro breastfeeding, but I struggled myself. And I have to say, my mum was probably my saviour in that situation, because obviously I'm 37. She had me 37 years ago. You do the math. And Seb just wasn't getting anything from my boob. And she said, oh, Lucy, for God's sake, that child needs a bottle. Give him a bottle. But I was still doing the same as you. I was looking for the right answer from a professional or somebody. And I think because my mum knows me so well, and she could see that he was hungry, she was like, you're going to have to go with the second option here. There's no other option. Otherwise your child's not going to have anything. So yeah, you're right.
You get so guilty. Cause I remember it happened with Theo. Like, it took a week for both of them for my milk to fully come through. So for the first week of their life, they were starving. They lost loads of weight, over 10% of their body fat. And then obviously you've got the midwives going, oh, you know, you need to put the weight, feed the child. I'm like, I'm trying, there's nothing coming out. And I'm kind of thinking, well, surely then I should go down the bottle route. And they're like, no, you know, breast is breast. And they got jaundice and this and that, because obviously they weren't getting enough milk. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is so stressful. Yeah. And, you know, I think with Athena, what I didn't do with Athena, I actually bought formula and had it as a just in case, whereas I didn't even have I didn't even give myself the option with Theo. I thought this time, I'm going to be kind to myself. I'm going to have the formula there just in case, because if she's really hungry and I can't produce enough for her, I want her to be satisfied. And that's what I did. You know, I did top her up with the formula and things as and when needed until my milk came through, and you know, I felt a lot better for it.
So do you think that the breastfeeding was quite a high contributor to your postnatal depression? I mean, I know that you've mentioned there was quite a lot going on in your births, and you know, quite a lot of feelings after having your children, but I feel like when I was at that point as a new mum, that was one of the most difficult things that I had to deal with, because an acceptance that I wasn't going to be able to breastfeed, because like you, I've only got one child, obviously, but I had this idea in my head that I was going to be some kind of boho mother and just walk around with my child like latched to me all the time. And it just didn't like go that way. Yes, it didn't go that way. And I have to say, through all the time that I did experience baby blues, that was the most severe that I experienced it, like crying for no reason, because I felt like I'd failed. So I had to have a constant conversation with myself. So would you say that was probably one of the highest contributing factors towards your postnatal depression? Or
I would probably say it was a massive, like, it was a really big factor, because it was that kind of thing that my mom is very pro breastfeeding, and obviously all the hospital staff, you know, they are very like breast is best, so it gets droned in to you from, like, even before you've had the baby, that breast is best. So when you're trying, you're thinking, yes, okay, this is the route that I want, because I want to give my child the best start. and it's not working, they kept, you know, you kind of get that, like, it doesn't, you know, it's not something that comes easy, so you have to work at it and this and that and the other. And I'm thinking, God, I just thought it was going to be like a natural response, that
yeah,
it would just happen and they would latch and it would be this beautiful thing. Whereas actually I used to cry every time that I could see that they were hungry, because I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to do it again. And yeah, because that I associated it with pain, because obviously the latch wasn't right. Yeah. And you know, obviously that wasn't down to anything that I could do, that was just because of the tongue tie.
Yeah,
I did used to go, oh my God, it's feeding time. So that anxiety built up every yeah time that there was a feeding time. That's every 3 hours. Imagine having that sense of dread every 3 hours. Yeah. And knowing that, but if you don't do it, your child's not going to have anything to eat, and yeah, it's going to be even worse. So it was like that constant feeling of pressure, and that I couldn't do something that should have been really natural.
Yeah.
And everyone else seems to be able to do it, why can't I do it? And yeah, I don't think people talk about it enough, that it's not something that's just easy and natural, and that actually some people can't do it and some people find it difficult, and there's nothing wrong with that. No. You know, if you find it difficult, there's no shame in saying, actually, you know what, maybe it's not for you, but you can still bond with your baby in this way or that way. You can still make it a routine and this, that, and the other. And if you have the milk and you're prepared to do it, you can, you know, express your milk and feed through a bottle. That way your baby's still getting all the goodness, and you're, you know, but you're having that freedom more, because nobody really told me that that was an option.
Yeah.
And I wish I'd done that with Theo, because it just would have made life so much easier. And obviously it's cheaper because it's your own milk. So yeah, at least you're not having to pay for formula and this, that, and the other.
Formula,
so
it's quite expensive, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
But I would say that a massive pro to me not being able to breastfeed was that Simon could be more involved in the feeding. And once I got over that initial guilt, there was no need for me to feel. But once I'd got over that, I realised very quickly that I was like, oh, nighttime feeds are going to be a bit easier because Simon could help. So with talking about partners, you know, was that an opportunity for your partner to then get more involved? You know, he's seen you go through all these struggles and everything. Was he affected as well? You know, what kind of emotions was he experiencing? You know, could you see it affecting him as well? Or
oh yeah, definitely. I think, you know, when I was at my lowest, he was kind of struggling to, you know, to kind of know what to say or what to do with me. I think as well, when Athena in particular, when she was born, for the first week or so when we were on our own, I think, like I said, he'd got a bit of PTSD from the kind of experience of her birth. So he was really out of sorts. He had to go to the doctors and get prescription medication for his anxiety. He also had tonsillitis for the first week, so he was really ill. I was having to like look after him and look after the baby and Theo, and kind of like I had my stitches, so I was just like, oh, painful.
I'll be there in a minute.
I was just like, oh, for God's sake. I was like, how many kids do I have now? But you know, he is like, now that he's kind of got the help that he needs, because I think that was the problem, is that men just don't seek it for themselves. So it was that kind of thing, like I had to kind of force him, like, you're not coping very well. I think I've sought help now and I'm feeling much better. Now you need to do the same. Yeah. And then that way we can support each other, because, you know, as my mom always says the same expression, is you can't clap with one hand.
No.
So you know, you've got to work. So saying that, I said that to Alex earlier, and he's got freakishly long hands, and he could, and I was like, oh, what's this? But it was just one of those things. He started getting the help, and he found it a bit easier. And I think now that she's at a little bit, because I think he just struggled with the small babies.
Yeah.
Like he kept on doing things. I'm like, no, you can't do that with the baby. Like when they're a bit older, you can, like, you know, throw them up in the air and this and that and the other. I was like, but not when they're, you know, it's like support the head.
Yes. Oh my God, those days. Yes.
So he did. I think he just thought he was going to break them all the time. So I think that's where his anxiety came in.
Yeah.
Because Simon, but like now they're a bit older. He's okay now with them.
Yeah. Because I think we do joke, don't we? And I have to bring it up, you know, like, well, you didn't give birth, you know, or I gave birth, or I did this, you know, we do joke. as a sex, don't we, with the men, and sort of, you know, well, I did that, you know, you couldn't do that, I did that, when those little arguments come up. But we mustn't forget them, because it is traumatizing for them as well. They can't do anything. They're waiting for something really exciting to come into the world, but they're completely helpless. They can't do anything for you in order to ease the pain or make it easier. So we must remember the boys in this equation, because it must be difficult for them. So it's
definitely, I think,
like that.
And I think because he was on his own, because my parents weren't there, my mom kept going to him, you know, you've got to support Natalie, you've got to look after her, you've got to be all the things that, so I think he'd put so much pressure on himself. Like, oh my God, I'm, you know, and I think that's why he got really ill afterwards, because he'd put so much pressure on himself and then he crashed. Yeah. And I think it is that kind of thing that, you know, it is easy to be like, yeah, I'm the one that's doing all the work, but actually he's still going through it as well. And kind of, obviously, you know, all the stresses that I was going through, are we going to get someone to look after Theo so I can be in the hospital? You know, it's also him thinking like he doesn't want to miss out on the birth of his child. And he's also like thinking, you know, he wants to support me because he's promised my mom that he was going to support me. So he was kind of like, oh God, what do I do? And I think, you know, I mean, Mother's Day being the other day, well, I don't know when this obviously podcast comes up, but you know, it's a case of he does know like all the things to tick the boxes, and he, you know, he does look after me. And even though sometimes men drive us mad, which they do, and they don't always, you know, I think a lot of the time with our relationship, he's bad cop, I'm good cop.
Oh, it's the other way around me and Simon. Oh, really? Bad cop. Yeah.
Oh, see, interesting. Even when I use my stern voice on the kids, they just laugh at me. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Something's like that.
I had the same thing when I was a TA. Like, no one listens to me. I don't know why. But yeah, so I always have to be like, wait till your dad gets home. He just, but you know, I think his upbringing is very strict. Whereas I think my mom was quite softly in her approach. Though, you know, when you'd cross the line, you'd be like, oh God.
It's good to have that balance, though.
That's the thing.
And it is funny, just on a side note, when I say to Simon, you're going to have to, you know, sound a little bit more, you know, upset about this, Simon. And he goes, oh, no, don't do that, Sebastian. Or Sebby, we call him Sebby. I'm like, oh, don't let him do that. But it's all about balance, isn't it? And
it's
a wrong way of doing it. It's as long as you come together as a team.
Oh, God, yeah.
Sounds like you guys have got a brilliant team there. So thank you for being so open and honest about everything you've experienced. Once you've, you know, had the professional help and support, what were your coping mechanisms moving forward? Because I know that it links in with your business, Athena's Bounty. So tell everyone a little bit about, you know, how you came out the other side and how you cope every day with your mental health.
I think Athena was about 6 months or so. I was nearing the end of my mom's in mind course. When I started, I talked to a friend that I used to work with. I said, oh, I write poetry and this, that, and the other. And I've got, you know, an idea. Maybe we can do like a business. I can, because she was an artist and I was the poet. I was like, you know, we can use your artwork with my poetry and then kind of bring it together. So over the summer holidays, that's what we started doing. And the more I was doing it, I was actually like, oh my God, I'd found my passion again, because I'd kind of just become mom.
Yeah.
And I felt like, because I was really into my amateur dramatics before, I was really into, like, I was reading all the, like, reading books all the time and doing loads of creative stuff. And then as soon as the kids came along, like, oh, we don't have the money for me to do my, because you have to pay like a membership fee, and I was like, oh, I can't afford to do that anymore. Also, the time that it takes, can't do that. So I stopped doing all the things that made me, things that I enjoyed doing. And because I was able to then do this from home, I was being able to be creative. And also, obviously, when I was, you know, making the sales and stuff, it was paying for itself. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, I can do something that I really enjoy that's paying for itself. And, you know, I can do it around the kids. So I'm like, this is perfect. And then as it kind of grew on, I kind of got my, I think my friend went back to work and I was obviously still on maternity leave, and I just kept on wanting to do more and more and grow. So I ended up actually teaching myself how to do watercolours. And so I ended up started doing the artwork as well as the poetry.
Wow, I didn't and, know
that. Yeah. So
well, I know that you do that now, but I didn't realise that you sort of self-taught yourself.
Yeah, because I never considered myself an artist. That's why I was kind of like, she can be the artist, because she was, you know, she was really like such a talented artist, and I never looked at myself like that. I'm not like anywhere near her level, but I kind of taught myself the bits, and that, you know, sometimes I'll come out, I'll get a picture and I'm like, oh, that's not too bad. That's pretty good. Ooh, I did that. So yeah, I surprise myself sometimes, and it's been nice to then kind of grow it. And obviously it's just kind of growing from there really, with the poetry and everything, and kind of coming into its own a bit. But it just it really helped give me that focus and that kind of that reason to get up in the morning, because I'd kind of lost that with my, I don't think I really ever knew what I wanted to do as a career. I'd gone into childcare, I'd gone into being a teaching assistant and things like that, because I just didn't really know what I wanted to do. I think I always wanted to be creative, but you get kind of told, oh, it's a hard line of business to get into, you know, you have to really like be in the right place at the right time. So even though it was my love, I was kind of being shifted away from it. Whereas now I can do it, and I can say, okay, I'm not making millions, but I'm doing something that I really love. I'm being creative, and people want to have what I'm, you know, creating in their homes and send as gifts and things. And that means a lot to me. So,
well, also as well, I will say to the listeners right here, right now, your artwork is amazing and your poetry is amazing. So everybody needs to go and check out Athena's Bounty, because you don't do it any justice. You should have more confidence in yourself, because your work is absolutely amazing.
Oh, that's something that I keep getting told a lot of, is like, you need to, you know, be a bit more kind to yourself and this and that and the other, because I don't tend to see myself as an artist or a poet. And I am starting to kind of try and believe my own hype a little bit more, so to speak.
I think that ties in though with always putting your children first, your family first, and, you know, not thinking outside being mum. You know, we wear many hats as a mum, and I think you do lose your identity a bit, you do lose your confidence a bit. And unfortunately, it is tough, but you're the only person that can carry yourself out of that, aren't you? And I think over time, you will become more confident, because you'll become a known name, and you'll be everywhere, Natalie, everywhere. No, but it's only natural to feel like that, but I think you're definitely on the right path now to sort of, having more confidence in yourself. Yeah. And so you should.
It is. I think the expression that I came up with is that I was the friend character in my own story. I wasn't the main character of my own story. And it is kind of trying to change that mindset. I'm like, no, I am the main character of my story, and it's okay for this, you know, for that to happen. I don't always have to be the psychic that's helping everybody else to achieve their dreams, the fairy godmother character, which is what I tend to kind of put myself as. I'm like, yeah, it's my time. It's like, this is my spin-off series, and I'm gonna be this, so to speak.
I love it.
But I did actually, I've got a little poem that I wrote for my children, if you'd like to listen.
Definitely. Yeah. I love a poem from Natalie.
So this is what it's one that I wrote kind of about the highs and lows of parenthood and all the different things that it can bring. Obviously more specifically about my little boy and little girl. Here you go. So that little chuckle, that little curl, that tiny curl, my clever boy, my inquisitive girl. They make me laugh, they make me cry. They make me crash, they make me fly. They make me mad, they make me proud. They give me a headache when they're being too loud. They make a mess, they tidy up. They make me feel like an overflowing cup. My mixed emotions, my roller coaster ride. My wanting to run to the bathroom to hide. Bathroom antics, the flooded floor. Putting away those clothes that I've already put away 5 minutes before. My greatest blessings. They give such joy, my inquisitive girl, and my clever boy.
Oh, that's amazing. I love it.
Thank you.
I know it's personal to you and it's about your children, but I think so many mums will be able to relate to that poem, particularly the toys. Although Seb doesn't tidy up yet, he only gets them out and throws them everywhere.
Yes, Athena, we've got those IKEA boxes and Athena loves getting every single one of them out and putting it all over the floor, and I have to kind of look and like it's an obstacle course about to ow, go through ow, the room. Ow. Yeah, ow, Lego, ow, ow.
So
yeah, bless them.
I will pop details in the show notes about your business because I think it's really important to share. And I'm also very lucky to have you as a partner in the Ultimate Mums Club Hub. Best decision ever. I've got some amazing partners, but really feel like I've found a true friend in you. So I'm so glad that you said yes. And I'm interested to know, because obviously you've been through postnatal depression and that battle. How do you think, well, first of all, I guess, are you enjoying the content in the group so far? And do you think it would be of help to people that are suffering with postnatal depression or new mums out there?
I definitely think that I wish it was there when I'd first had my children, because obviously I'm finding it really useful to look at it now and go back over things. But I look at it and thinking, oh, like when there was the phonics sessions in the group and things like that, I'm thinking I was too nervous to go out to phonics sessions and all the groups when I had Athena, because I'd got Theo as well. I stayed more at home. I was more introverted.
Yeah.
And I think if I'd had that opportunity that I could still do it all online and still have that interaction with other kind of adults and to do all the things and think, oh, I'm ticking the boxes for myself and for my child, but I don't have to have the anxiety of leaving the house, this, that and the other, it would have been a game changer for me. And to be honest, it might have been a different story with my postnatal depression if I'd had something like an outlet like that. Because you do put pressure on yourself, like, oh, I've got to go out, I've got to do this because it's good for my child, but then, you know, you have to take the kitchen sink with you. Yeah. And it's stressful. And I think because it was my second and I kind of, you know, I now know what to expect, it was kind of like, do I really want to put myself through that, going out and all that? You know, she'll end up crying or pooing or something, so yeah, I might as well just stay at home. So that's kind of where it's gone. So I do think having like the Ultimate Mums Club Hub when you've just had a new baby and you're kind of wanting that interaction and things to do with your child, it's fantastic. You know, it's a great concept because like you say, it's you call it your interactive directory.
Yes.
And it's fantastic because like the amount of times I'd gone to free sessions with Theo, I think I went for a rhythm time session once, and I think for half of it he was breastfeeding and the other half of it he was asleep. So I kind of felt like I've gone out of the house. I was ending up singing. I think Alex was in the circle doing the singing with the other children rather than, you know, rather than Theo. So it would be nice because then it's always in the group for you to then go back to when it is a right time, because timings can be a bit funny with classes and stuff. So it's nice just having the access to it when you want it or need it.
Yeah, and having that choice so that
Know,
if you are having a hashtag winging day, then you can leave the house and go, you know, and well, outside the pandemic, of course, when we leave thank you. I really value your opinion, so that's
no, really, and it's nice for the stuff that you've got for the bombs as well, because I think a lot of these baby groups, you know, it's all about the children, this, that and the other, and their development, but actually those kind of groups are so important for the moms, and there's loads of stuff for the moms on there. Because I did the it was like the very first week, and it was writing down I can't remember now. It's my brain doesn't work.
It was Lorna Reynolds, wasn't it? And she's actually
that was it
as well.
I found that really, I did her activity and I found it really, really helpful, and really enjoyed it.
I'm really glad. So lastly, I almost don't want it to end because I love chatting to you, Natalie. We can carry on talking afterwards, I'm sure.
I know, I can chat for England, mate.
Both can, can't we? Something very much in common there. So I like to end my podcast with my guests by asking them for three top tips they would like to share with other mums that may help them on their journey in motherhood so far. So it could be anything, but if you have three top tips you'd be willing to offer our listeners, I'd love to hear them.
I do. I did think about this long and hard because I thought, gosh, I'm not very good at coming things on the spot. So I had a little think about it and I'd come up with being kind to yourself as one of my top ones, because it is so easy to put everyone else on top of, you know, where you are on the priorities. But actually, if you're not well, if you're not in a good place, then you can't be the best person to the people around you. Definitely. And I think that's what I looked at when I started the business. And Alex, you know, he said to me like, oh, you know, but you need to spend more time with it. You know, you get all those guilt trips. I'm like, am I spending enough time with my children? And I said, I had to kind of step back and like, you know, no, actually, because before I found the business, before I found that happy place, I wasn't the best version of myself. And if I'm not the best version of myself, then I'm not going to be, it's not nice for the kids and it's not nice for me. It's not nice for you. I was like, actually, isn't it better when I'm doing something that makes me happy and, you know, it'll bring joy to everybody because you're in a better headspace. So it's very much a happy mom, happy child. And I do believe in that, you know, wholeheartedly, that you do have to kind of put yourself almost first, because if you don't, then everything else starts to crumble, because you are the foundation of your family.
Yeah.
And if those foundations aren't strong because you've just let yourself slide, everything else will crumble apart.
Definitely.
My top tip number two, this is going to sound a bit, I've been watching Bluey a lot. I don't know if you've ever watched it. It's an Australian kids program, but it's online with Hey Dougie, I would say, in terms of it's good for the kids, but also there's lots of stuff that the adults can like kind of pick up on and enjoy.
Oh, I love that.
It's brilliant. It's on Disney Plus, Bluey. The kids absolutely love it. And there was one episode, it was talking about like we're like long-term adults, and like I think the children wanted to do something and the dad was getting a bit stressed out and he was getting a bit ratty. And then the fortune cookie said, you know, a flower might bloom more than once, but you'll never be young again, like that kind of thing. And so I think my main top tip is live through the eyes of your child. So when your child's kicking off and having a tantrum about something really in your head is ridiculous, think about it from their point of view. When you were a child and someone was telling you that you have to stop doing what you want, you know, what you're enjoying doing, whatever, how it would feel to you. Because it would feel like if someone came in and I was watching my favorite program and someone just turned it off,
yeah,
I think I'd kick off.
But as parents
we feel like, because we're the parent, we can do that.
Yeah,
because it's time to eat now. And it is sometimes like, you know, I'll do that with Theo. I might say, come on, Theo, it's dinner time. And then if he doesn't come, I switch the TV off and he like loses his mind. I'm thinking, yeah, he's into something. And I know what I'm like when I'm really into something. Like my husband, bless him, he's actually just bought my lunch in, because when I'm into something, I forget about everything else. So I think it is like, say, putting yourself in their shoes and thinking, actually, to them, it could be a life or death situation.
Yeah.
And it is that kind of thing. So
that's such a good tip.
And I'd say my third one is follow your child's development with what they're ready to do and not what books or other people say. Because like I got told with Theo's speech and this, that, and the other, that he was behind when he had his 2-year check, and you know, we'll have to come back and redo it and this, that, and the other. And I was stressing out about his development. And now, I mean, he's the top of his class. They've got like mixed year groups. So he actually got put into the class that's it's year one, year two. So he's doing a bit of a mixture of year one and year two work. He's a really excellent reader. He's a great talker. And this all came from a place before where they were worried about his development.
Yeah.
So he just bloomed in his own time. And I think that's what's important, is that, you know what developmental milestones your child should be kind of aiming towards, but don't get bummed out on the details, because we all do things at our own pace. And just because so-and-so is telling you that they should be doing this and that and the other at this age, doesn't mean that they won't be doing it all, but they'll do it a lot quicker. Maybe some kids start earlier, but it takes them a long time to process it until they perfect it. Whereas another child might do it later, but then pick it up like that.
Yeah. So that's such a good tip, because I think I have spoken about it briefly before, you know, as much as you don't want to always listen to other people's advice, or perhaps you do, I think it's also important to not get too carried away either way, and enjoy the moment as well, because you could get so caught up on whoever it is saying to you, you know, your child's behind on X, Y, and Z, that you're not actually enjoying the moment, which then is stressful and perhaps even puts pressure on your child without even realizing.
Because I think Dia's perfectionist, like he gets stressed out and he can't do something. And that's probably because that's what I'm like as well. I'm a perfectionist, and it's that kind of thing that, you know, you do because you have, you know, people have expectations of you, like what you need to be doing as a mom. Then you're then, you know, all that pressure, it always goes down, doesn't it? Also,
definitely,
if you're, if you know, your child's expected to do this at this age, so you're then putting the expectation, like, they, you need to do this, you need to be able to do this, and so they are going to have that, it's a constant loop of like, I've got to be good, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, and you know, it does cause a bit of stress and stuff, but it's hard. It's a hard cycle to break.
Definitely. I think a really good note to finish on is women, or mum's instinct is very, very strong, and you need to sort of follow, I know it sounds a bit cliche, but follow your heart and follow what you think is right, and only, you know, obviously seek advice if you need it, if you're not 100% sure. But 9 times out of 10, if I follow my gut feeling, it usually turns out, you know, all right. Not just
That's the thing, you know, you do know, like we'd got Athena a bed, and you know, my husband was like, oh God, do we really want to go down that route, because she'll be out of the bed all the time, we were stressing that she'd be running around, and actually she stays in her bed, she's really good, she stays in her bed. She does like shout for us in the morning. She's like, ah! I'm like, oh, okay, she's awake, but she'll stay in there. So all of our fears and anxieties of that next step, actually they were unfounded. We didn't have to worry. And I just have to say, I bought her a potty yesterday, and she's had her first wee on the potty yesterday. I mean, she's not long term two, and with Theo we waited a long time, but he wasn't ready. When we tried to potty train him at the age where they, you know, they told us, oh, you should be potty training, he just wasn't ready. He wasn't talking about the toilet, he wasn't interested in it, whereas she from quite an early age has gone wee or poo and like you know, gone to the toilet. So with her it's like, yeah, I think she's ready. So we got it, you know, it's just listening to what your child, if your child's nowhere near ready for something, then don't force it on them, because it's not gonna get anywhere. He didn't actually get properly potty trained till he went to preschool, like that's when he started doing, and you know, it took him a while, bless him, because he's got a bit of a, fortunately he's got the same kind of bowel as me, so he has to have medication for it. But it took him a while, but he got there in the end, and that's the main thing, isn't it? You get there in the end.
Exactly, yeah. It's not a race, is it?
Exactly.
Oh. Well, thank you so much, Natalie, for joining us today. I'm sure the listeners won't want to put you down, and they need to keep their eyes peeled, because you're hoping to release your own podcast soon, aren't you?
Yes, I've got the trailer on and I'm working on it.
Yeah, so I mean, I will put all the details in the show notes of how people can find you. And yeah, thank you for being so open and honest, and thank you for joining us today. It's been amazing.
Thank you for having me, and I'm sorry if I said too many times.
Oh, don't worry. I do that all the time. All right, then we'll see you soon, hopefully.
Yeah.
You take care.
And you. Bye.
Bye.
So that's it for this episode of the Ultimate Mums Club podcast. It would mean the world to me if you would subscribe and rate the show on iTunes or Podbean. I hope that it has helped contribute towards your recharging your batteries and doing something for you. Did you know that the Ultimate Mums Club has its very own Facebook membership group? The exclusive membership is only £5 a month and will present you with activities for mum as well as activities for your children, to keep them occupied and learning. This will help you in your health, fitness, mental health, well-being and self-care. All the details of how you can join will be in the show notes below. It is so important to look after you, so make sure that you do. Bye for now, and see you next time at the Ultimate Mums Club podcast.